None of it makes any sense, does it? The lockdown measures, the masking, the closures of schools and parks, and the funneling everyone into Costco but not letting them go to church. The fact we can buy certain things, but for whatever reason we can't buy non-essential items. And who decides what is non-essential? Clothing and shoes are not essential. None of it makes any sense. It doesn't make any sense that we've been under the strictest lockdown measures in the world, in Ontario, supposedly, for greater than 200 days, and yet the cases keep climbing. If these measures worked, surely that wouldn't be the case. There's so much more I could name that doesn't make sense, and in a minute I'm going to go through a big list of questions. But today's video is about how it does actually make sense. Every single thing we're seeing makes sense if you know the angle to look at it from. And there's the crux of this matter. In occult societies, secret societies, they have a term. It's called the initiated. So if you are initiated into the cult, you suddenly understand all the secrets, and things that you say in the outside world won't mean anything to the people who are not initiated into the cult, right? So you got to look at it that way. All of this stuff with COVID and the lockdown and all of it makes total sense to the initiated. Now, there's people out here who have cracked the code. We're not in the cult, but we've learned to read the language. See, they essentially are engaged in continual doublespeak. It means one thing to one set of people and another thing to another set of people. They're talking to each other and we're overhearing, and to us, it doesn't make any sense. But like I said, there's some of us who've cracked the code. We do understand it. We're trying to explain it. And do you know what they call us? Conspiracy theorists. They can get away with it because they know most people aren't initiated, won't understand the codes and the symbols. And so those of us outside the cult who understand the language, who try to explain it to you guys, we get called tinfoil hat, and we get called conspiracy theorists, and we get called right-wing extremists, terrorists, misinformation artists, disinformation artists, dangerous, and all sorts of other things. Well, look, I'm going to show you today some examples of people who almost get it, but claim they don't. And also, I'm going to take you through the questions and the answers for some, just a few smattering of things to show you how it really does all make sense and the angle you've got to look at it from in order to clear the fog from your mind and stop asking yourself these questions. And I'm going to start off with a two-minute video clip from people who are engaged in trying to figure out how to convince the governments to be sensible, and they're coming up baffled. Listen to this.
The scientific spirit or the scientific method has been abandoned by public health scientists. Yeah. They have a training in science, but many of them simply don't understand the scientific spirit. I'm speaking as a philosopher, not as a scientist. But I have friends who are scientists. I've been following some very prominent scientists who are serious about what they do and have a scientific spirit, which basically means seeking out the truth, trying to understand how things actually work, revising your opinions when new evidence presents itself. And the evidence that this scientific spirit has been abandoned by public health scientists and officials, or at least a lot of them, the evidence for that is the fact that in the face of evidence that lockdowns and similar measures are ineffective, are not actually working, and are highly destructive, and there's plenty of data on that, In the face of that mounting evidence, they have made minimal changes to those policies. Now, and they have recommended minimal changes to those policies, these public health officials. Now, that shows me that they're not attending to the actual evidence, which means that they don't have a scientific spirit. Science has become a form of ideology. That is, it's not science anymore. It's been instrumentalized for political purposes, for political purposes. What are those purposes? This is a really curious and interesting question. I don't have a good answer to it, but I do think it's difficult to understand what they're trying to achieve, what governments are trying to achieve, because it just seems so obvious to me when you look at the correlations between these measures and outcomes that they simply are not effective if you compare across different countries. So why do they persist in using these methods of population control? I really don't understand. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. It goes against my nature.
Me too.
To be a conspiracy theorist. Mm-hmm. So I always try to look at a rational explanation that's kind of based on good faith intentions. But honestly, I think that this has become a kind of stepping stone towards political tyranny, towards the suspension of rule of law and civil rights. And that project has taken over and become more important than the public health project.
Okay, so that guy admits that none of it makes any sense, quote unquote, but it looks like it's leading to tyranny. But he says, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I like to find a good faith, rational explanation for these things. So it doesn't make any sense. Well, can you see the problem? He is so wedded to the idea that there's a good faith, rational explanation to this that he can't look at the quote-unquote conspiracy theories to try to make sense of it. And in my estimation, he'll never make sense of it until he does look at the other information that's out there. Didn't he start off by saying that you have to recalibrate your hypothesis if new information comes in? That's what he said the scientific method is. And it is. But he won't do it because certain things have been called conspiracy theories, I guess. So he is suffering from the effects of a reversive blockade, as I explained in my video, How Evil Caught the World in Political Ponerology. Mentally, he can't let certain information in, and he never will. Well, I hope he will eventually. Okay, that's to set the tone. Now, Here's some examples of the questions. Ontario has now vaccinated just over 50% of eligible adults and has been under one of the strictest lockdowns in the world for over a month, roughly 6 months for the city of Toronto. Is anyone else wondering why nothing seems to work here? Well, Shazia Teha, it is working. There's your problem. It is working. It's just not what you think working means. I've done video after video talking about how they're trying to break our will so that we will accept the new rules of the game that they want to bring in. Those new rules have so many names: Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, the Green Revolution, the Fourth Industrial Revolution, the Great Reset, Build Back Better, and more. The New World Order. They want to bring it in, and what they have to do first is wreck everything. They have to ruin the economy, put small businesses out of business. They have to get people, all of their old habits broken, like children going to school and riding, flying around on planes and easily crossing borders and having a job and having your own home. All of this stuff has to be pulled down for them to put their new world order in. And it's totally real. But the uninitiated can't see it. Now, these are some of the things that just don't make sense if you're thinking straight. Why doesn't CDC consider used masks biohazard medical waste with strict disposal protocols? Right. If this was really a dangerous pandemic and their aim was actually to stop the spread, they would be doing that. They would also be handing out masks for free. There would be deliveries to our homes. But none of that is happening. It's because that's not really the aim. The aim is to bring in the Great Reset. The aim is to break society. Since when do outbreaks last so long? Never in my 63 years have I encountered such a long outbreak, not even here in Africa. And also, what are the physical effects of fear on one's physiology? Doesn't that make people sick? Helen Eck from Africa asks another two good questions. I mean, what is going on? Do you see any evidence of a massive pandemic around? Are your graveyards like backed up? Are there ambulances hauling people away in hazmat suits on your streets? What evidence do you actually see? Not what's on the news. What evidence do you actually see that there's all these sick and dying people everywhere? None. And also, yes, good question. We are all so stressed, and some people are extremely fearful. That makes you sick. And a lot of times it makes you sick with respiratory ailments, asthma, bronchitis, and other issues related to your breathing. Also, heart diseases and things like this. Tons of things result from stress, physical joint pain and swelling, all kinds of things. And so this helps them as well because then there are some sick people around. Not to mention, and I know what this sounds like, but take it for what you will, they want to reduce the population. That's part of the Great Reset. That's part of the Agenda 2030. Fewer people, smaller carbon footprint, easier to manage. Sadly, that's part of it. And then Jay here asks a bunch of other questions. Why is the hotel lobby coffee only available during restricted or reduced hours? What's that all about? What you walking through a restaurant, you have to wear a mask, but you can sit down and eat and take your mask off. Social distancing in the airport terminal, and then they just pack you onto the plane. Why are bars closed but restaurants open? I mean, there's just all kinds of questions about it. Asymptomatic spread, it just doesn't happen. Wearing masks don't stop the transmission. If they're catching the droplets, then the droplet dries, then you're breathing through the mask. That is going to push the particles out like an atomizer. It's just the exact opposite of what real health measures would do if they were done by knowledgeable people who wanted to stop the spread of a virus. There's been study after study after study about this. So why are they doing it? Why are some retail outlets more essential than others? Yes, we talked about that. And on the questions go, I mean, I have all of these. How does a curfew stop a virus? Why is church attendance considered to be more dangerous than going to Costco? How do overwhelmed hospital workers have time to rehearse and record dance videos? Why are hospitals laying off staff? They're doing that in Ontario. Why are they sending COVID equipment over to India? Why are they repeating steps which have been proven failures in the past or in other countries? Why are they ignoring some virologists, some Nobel Prize-winning ones, and some doctors and some researchers, but not others? Other ones that want the fear to continue, those guys are always on the news. But the ones who say, "Look, I've found a treatment. Here, look, we can open up the economy where it's safe." The ones that are warning about the side effects of the vaccine, those guys are all shut down. Why? No, but really, why? Should we not have them on the news? Should we not debate them? It's all one way. It's all fear. It's all nonsense. Unless you can let yourself look where you've never let yourself look before. I mean, here's an example of a guy who is a leading anti-lockdown activist. His name is Nick Hudson, and he sat down to talk with his interviewer here, whose name I'm sorry I forget. I'll try to find the video and link to it in the description box for you. It's extraordinary, but I want you to pay attention to the fact that he actually almost describes the exact quote-unquote conspiracy, while at the same time dismissing the idea that this could have been a plan. Okay? Just listen to this.
We saw governments rushing into these policies that conflicted with every single established pandemic response guideline. The World Health Organization, the CDC, and many others had these elaborate documents that guided you through what the policy response ought to be in the event of a respiratory virus outbreak. And those documents, in the space of about 2 weeks in late March, were summarily torn up and discarded, and a policy that those documents had advised against was undertaken on a global basis.
Is this just a really big mistake, or is there an agenda?
So your question is why? Why?
Yeah.
You know? And the why question is probably the hardest one to answer.
It's so funny, because this is exactly what Dan said. This is the hardest question to answer.
Yes. So there's a divergence of views on this. Before I begin to answer it, let me say that I wish there was a conspiracy. If there's a conspiracy, it becomes leaked at some point. Big conspiracies are very hard to maintain. And you can find out who the two or three people are who were plotting and planning, and you can deal with them. And then you have solved your problem. But the reality, I think, is actually far more dangerous than a conspiracy. So I don't believe there's a conspiracy or an agenda. What I think we are faced with is, first of all, somehow need to solve all of this by constraining activity, by lockdown, is very much in the back of the minds of these same people. That's the philosophical concept from which they come. Centralization, Malthusianism. And that's why I say that is more frightening than a conspiracy. They're ideologically in agreement with one another. They're powerful because they have managed to silence all the dissenting voices. And that combination, for me, is terrifying.
How can he say those things without hearing himself? And I actually think the interviewer was thinking the same thing as I'm saying right now. While the guy was talking, he's like, okay, it's not an agenda and it's not a conspiracy, but simultaneously all around the world, public health officials and governments threw out the old playbook and instigated and implemented completely new rules, all that went against usual protocols, all at the same time. But it's not an agenda and it's not a conspiracy. And also, this same group has two main ideologies, collectivism and Malthusianism, which is actually population reduction. So this same group is committed to central planning and population reduction. And they're all acting in concert, and they're incredibly wealthy and powerful, and they've shut down all dissent. But he wishes this was a conspiracy. And he says, I mean, he brushes it off and he says, because then we would easily find the one or two or three people who are planning this and they'd be exposed. Newsflash, Nick Hudson, nobody's saying it's two or three people. It's hundreds of people, thousands possibly. And they have been exposed over and over and over in their own words, writing whole books about it. And you want to see some of the shape of that? It's the World Economic Forum's Great Reset. It's the Build Back Better hashtag and theme that is running through all of the Western countries right now, which actually is the Great Reset. And the Great Reset comes from the ideas in the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And all of this comes from the World Economic Forum, which is a giant meeting of the heads of the most powerful corporations in the world. And they are now officially partnered with the United Nations as of 2019, just in time for the coronavirus pandemic. The pandemic represents a rare but narrow window of opportunity to reflect, reimagine, and reset our world. These people are funded by the Rockefellers, the Gateses, what's that one? The Wellcome Trust, all kinds of ones that come out of the Scandinavian countries and Germany and all the pharma companies. In fact, those guys, six pharma companies in six countries and a couple of foundations all got together and started this organization called CEPI, the Coalition for Emergency Pandemic. I don't remember what it is. It's about pandemics and vaccines. They came together in late 2017 to form that coalition. At the same time as the World Bank was issuing pandemic bonds for the first time, and they would have had to pay out unless a coronavirus pandemic came along. And it was just about to have to pay out when, boom, the coronavirus pandemic came along. And you know what happened 2 months before the coronavirus pandemic was announced to the world? Bill Gates, the World Economic Forum, Johns Hopkins University, the UN, the CIA, China's CDC, the World Bank. Who am I missing? I'm probably missing players in this. They held the event called Event 201, where they discussed almost exclusively how they were going to manage the media during a coronavirus pandemic to make sure that their messages were always in the forefront and to make sure that narratives that counteracted what they wanted were pushed to the bottom or completely censored. I mean, we know countless doctors have lost their licenses over this and been threatened. Many people have lost their livelihoods. People have been censored online. People have been thrown out of their professional associations. People have lost access to payments and all kinds of things. They're going way, way, way far out of their way to make sure that only their coronavirus messaging gets put in front of the people. And it's working. Everyone's terrified. And now everybody's asking themselves, why aren't any of the measures working? Why don't any of these steps make any sense at all? Why are our public officials flip-flopping? Why aren't they giving us access to real data? Because it's not about a pandemic. It's about crushing our nations, crushing our education system, our small and medium-sized businesses, our economy, our families. The faith community is just being decimated, or they're attempting to anyway, but I think what's actually happening is more and more people are coming back to their faith because it is the only thing that makes sense right now. But they don't want us meeting and talking together. They don't want us bonding together at all. They want to destroy, rip apart the fabric of Western society so that they can bring in their sustainable development goals and the crazy, insane cult of AI and what they call synthetic biology in their efforts to implement the transhumanist technocratic Great Reset. That's what's happening. It all does make sense. Let me just show you this graphic. This is basically the bones of the fourth industrial revolution. They want to create the Internet of Things, which is which will have all infrastructure and all goods attached to sort of a centralized internet hub. And in that way, they can have something that they love and they crave, predictability. That's code, by the way, for sustainable development. They don't want to have to guess. And it was such a pain for these global monopoly corporations to try to guess what the demand might be in a given region. It's so hard to know if you're going to lose a crop to the weather. It just throws everything off. So they want everything portioned exactly. Every person gets exactly the same portion allocated to them of everything, everything. And they will bring in synthetic food, food grown in conditions that they believe they can control so that it's always balanced. That's the type of way that they think. And it'll all be hooked up to the Internet of Things because this way they can track it. And they can predict it and they can deliver it. That's what they think. The blockchain is the tracking mechanism and it ends transactional privacy. It's exactly opposite of what they tell you it is. The blockchain will be tied to the Internet of Things, of course, and all the smart devices plus the smart implants. Yes, implants. They want to implant things into people. Here is Klaus Schwab saying so.
Aujourd'hui, au bout de ça, on parle de puces qu'on pourra s'implanter. Ce sera quand, ça?
Certainement dans les 10 années à venir. Et d'abord, on va les implanter dans nos vêtements, uh-huh. c'est-à-dire wearables, comme on le dit. Et après, on pourrait s'imaginer qu'on les implante dans nos cerveaux ou dans notre peau. Et à la fin, peut-être il y a une communication directe entre notre cerveau et le monde digital. Ce que nous voyons, c'est une sorte de fusion du monde physique, digital et biologique.
It's at the end what the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
It'll all go through the blockchain. It's a tool for calculating your value as a human being and your permissions, whether or not you're a good citizen, whether or not you've already had your allotted amount of calories for the day, that sort of thing. And of course, big data, you can see where that comes in. They crunch all the numbers. Now, they're also going to combine this with CRISPR, DNA, and mRNA genetic engineering. The digital currency just plays into all of this, because if you had cash and you were still hungry after, you know, eating your fill for the day, according to the planners, if you had cash, you could just pay someone to get a, you know, get a burrito or pay someone for their calories with cash. But if you only have digital currency, it's all in your phone or in your chip that's inserted into your body, you'll never be able to do that. If you're hungry, you're just hungry, and that's that. It attaches to the circular economy. The concept of the circular economy means that private ownership will be abolished in favor of a leasing model. Look this up. They literally mean you will lease your clothing and your light. And food is a bit different, but it will all still have these tracking mechanisms in it. And they want us to recycle food so that waste can become food for another, in another system. Just look it up. Just find out what they really mean. Modern monetary theory is the end of the price system. You can already see this happening when you say to yourself, oh my God, we will never pay this back. We are trillions and trillions of dollars in debt, and it's growing every single day by trillions. How could we ever pay this back? Well, the answer is they have no intention of paying it back. This whole system is gone already. They are literally just printing money. We all know that. Well, where it's going to lead is that the value of everything will be set by the central planners, and according to whatever value they set, plus how much they think the average person will need to live, they will give that to us in the form of universal basic income. It's all planned. You see here on digital currency, I actually have replace legal system, because the way I look at it, who needs police? Who needs judges? Who needs defense attorneys or crown prosecutors when they've got every little bit of your data tracked, traced, stored on the blockchain and readily available in relation to every other thing in the world, in your environment? They're just going to say, we know you were there. We know your heart rate was elevated. We know your hands picked something up and you ran away. Therefore, you're the thief. And they'll just dock you money or credits. Automatically, there won't be a justice system. The Sustainable Development Goals, as I already talked about here, these are how they justify the limits to access to food, energy, goods, travel, natural spaces, reproduction, even. It leads to having no joy. Nothing is spontaneous. You may not make a spur-of-the-moment decision. It is all planned. It's just misery. And finally, virtual and augmented reality. That's their answer to this problem right there of no joy and no creativity. It will be so awful to get up and not go to work and not be able to choose what you're going to do for the day because they've cordoned off natural spaces. You can't start a business. What are you going to do? They give you virtual and augmented reality so that you can go in this fake world where you have no carbon footprint virtually, and you can be anything you want to be, anyone you want to be. I've shown examples, though, of who's designing these virtual worlds, and it's people like Marina Abramović. As I talk, I'll put some images of her and her work up on the screen. Microsoft has partnered with this Looney Tune to build a virtual reality world. I did a video a while back called They Hate Us. I showed another example of a virtual reality world that you might go live in. And it's sick. It's twisted cartoons with highly, highly sexualized. I mean, some of us just don't want to live in that environment. And is the best we can hope for that someone will create a wholesome virtual reality world where we walk around and we're like, have you seen that game called Animal Crossing? And we're all going to just be in there all day? How fulfilling is that? It's not. The answer is it's not. And that's, you know, that's why I believe it will all collapse. But they are trying to take us into this world. They're trying. Yes, here is Dallas School District launching first of its kind hybrid school. Students will create an avatar and explore their school virtually in a video game type platform from Stemuli.
Behind me is the Dallas ISD campus that'll hold the very first of its kind hybrid school, mixing online with in-person learning, reimagining what the traditional school day looks like. Dr. Olga Romero will be the principal of Dallas Hybrid Prep, the exciting new school for students looking to take courses online as well as attend school in person in this historic building.
Fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. You have to apply now at dallasisd.org, choose Dallas ISD, and find that hybrid school.
Romero believes this will eventually become the model for schooling across the nation, with more parents working from home wanting more of a balance for their children. Taylor Sheed is the founder of Stemuli, the creators behind this new virtual world students will be attending school in.
It's a video game. It's a school in a video game. Although initially, you know, everybody might not say their kid is interested in a video game, I think the way we're building our platform is really targeted, again, just so that kids can invent their own world. And that's like limitless, whether somebody wants to play by themselves or they want to play in groups.
And for students Janelle and Kennedy, the fall can't come soon enough. They're looking forward to this new alternative to traditional school.
Actually being able to move around in the screen, it just seems a little more interesting.
So I think it'll just be funner to actually be able to do a lot of stuff, even if you're at home or in person.
And while this is only for fourth through sixth graders right now, Dr. Romero hopes it'll eventually be offered to any grade level so every student can take advantage of this innovative learning.
Stemuli. 3 days a week, in-person classes 2 days a week. And they are saying that this is so parents can have choice. They've just erased the middle part where they destroyed school and the economy and parents' jobs and family incomes and family routines and children's mental health with COVID. That's what they did. And now you see they're not even going to talk about it anymore. It's like it never happened. Oh no, we're going to do this virtual school, which is the virtual reality school, walking around as if you... Anyway, they're going to do this, they say, to offer parents choice. I think the parents' choice is to have their kids go back to school, end this stupid pretend pandemic, and go back to the old normal. That would be the choice. What else? Right, this is an official Government of Canada website. This office is called Policy Horizons Canada. And look at this, from February 2020, exploring biodigital convergence. What did I just tell you all about? Here's the three ways biodigital convergence is emerging, and actually they're all the same. Full physical integration of biological and digital entities. I'm not going to read the other two because they are the same. They're just making it look like it's something else. Biodigital convergence is opening up striking new ways to change human beings, our bodies, minds, and behaviors. Change or create other organisms, alter ecosystems, sense, store, process, and transmit information, manage biological innovation, structure and manage production and supply chains. You see, do you remember what I tried to describe to you here? It sounded crazy, but this is literally an official Canadian government website. Change or create. organisms, change human beings, our minds, our behaviors, our bodies. And then, what's this down here? Structure and manage production and supply chains? Yes, because you will literally be part of the Internet of Things. And in their language that most people don't understand, supply chains include people. Infrastructure is mostly now digital. It's not what you used to think. Railroads, roads, you know, lights and power grids. They've changed the meaning of these words while you were sleeping. And now when people like me tell you, I took all this time, I suffered through reading their papers, listening to their evil, creepy, scary speeches that go on and on, listening to their conferences and their panels that they hold at Davos and at other places, the Singularity University, and other places like this. They mean it. And I heard it, and I am so just, it frustrates me no end to hear people who won't look at this. They won't research it. They have no earthly idea what these creeps are really up to and what they're talking about. But they tell me, oh, no. That sounds like some kind of conspiracy theory to me. No. I don't want to look at your garbage information. It's direct from the horse's mouth. Klaus Schwab and all these disgusting psychopaths. They're psychopaths. Just a little bit more from that Canadian government page. Digital technology can be embedded in organisms, and biological components can exist as parts of digital technologies. The physical meshing, manipulating, and merging of the biological and digital are creating new hybrid forms of life and technology, each functioning in the tangible world, often with heightened capabilities. Robots with biological brains and biological bodies with digital brains already exist, as do human-computer and brain-machine interfaces. The medical use of digital devices in humans, as well as digitally manipulated insects such as drone dragonflies and surveillance locusts, are examples of digital technology being combined with biological entities. By tapping into the nervous system and manipulating neurons, tech can be added to an organism to alter its function and purpose. New human bodies and new senses of identity could arise as the convergence continues. This is real. Get it through your head. This is real. And, you know, some people get it, some people don't. This guy gets it. DonaldBest.ca on Twitter. Why work if you can make as much staying home with government COVID payments? The Great Reset plan to destroy the dignity of work and self-support is proceeding well. You'll own nothing, and you'll be conditioned to live in tiny shipping container homes. This is not a joke. This is something the World Economic Forum put out. Have a look. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. They had to delete it off the internet, but of course copies still exist because the internet is forever. Allison McDowell at Philly852, she gets it completely. She spends her life trying to educate people on the dangers of this whole thing. And look what she says here. Digital ID is a prerequisite to telehealth to scale globally. Medical micro-credentials, IOB, health surveillance. IOB, by the way, is Internet of Bodies. Let me show you. It's a real thing. Here's Rand Corporation, huge defense contractor, weird science corporation going back many, many, many decades in the United States. This is from October 29th, 2020. What is the Internet of Bodies? Within this broader Internet of Things lies a growing industry of devices that monitor the human body and transmit the data collected via the Internet. This development, which some have called the Internet of Bodies, includes an expanding array of devices that combine software, hardware, and communication capabilities to track personal health data, provide vital medical treatment, or enhance bodily comfort, function, health, or well-being. However, these devices also complicate a field already fraught with legal, regulatory, and ethical risks. Yeah, you're telling me they do. And guess what? They're all rushing in to this space right now to make those trillions of dollars because it's unregulated. None of this so far is regulated. So to return to Alison McDowell, like she says, this is a prerequisite to telehealth. They don't want doctors anymore. And the doctors who are invested in this technology, and we have several in Canada, you'll see them all the time on the news hyping the COVID fear. They're the ones hyping the fear because they have money in telehealth. Some of them own telehealth companies. Jared Kushner, I believe, owns telehealth companies in the States. So you wonder why they're doing this? It's so that they can make money and control each person on this Internet of Bodies. Look, I'm sorry to tell you this, but it's true. Here's Financial Times. Discover the use cases that make AI a $1 trillion per year opportunity for global banking. That's just banking. Get in the picture? Why do none of these COVID measures make sense? They just don't make sense to you. You're not initiated into this transhumanist cult. You don't get it. But look at it through their eyes. They destroy education so they can replace it with virtual education. They destroy medicine so they can replace it with telehealth. They destroy the supply chain so that they can bring in their new fangled supply chain and infrastructure that includes human bodies.
It's at the end what the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
It's exactly the same thing, but sure, there's no group of people with an agenda. No, no, they all just thought of this independently. They're not really trying to bring this in as they destroy everything we've ever known and sneak in these things like virtual reality school. You really think this isn't all connected? Right. I mean, look at this. The Justice Center has heard from staff at two different Alberta hospitals, one in Calgary and one in Edmonton, stating they are near empty. Near empty. The data show that hospital ICUs in 2020 were at their lowest level of usage since 2015. How does that square with them saying they need to continue and extend lockdowns and social distancing and masking and closures of businesses and parks and recreation facilities and travel and roadblocks and curfews? How does that square? It doesn't, unless your agenda was to totally break society. One more important thing I think I should just mention before I close this off is you might still be saying, okay, but they're breaking society, but still it doesn't make sense and they're hurting people. And that's part of it. It's part of it to hurt you. It's part of it to confuse you. It's part of it. The confusion technique, it's a real technique developed by interrogators in the CIA when they took prisoners and they wanted to extract information from them. They figured out that they had to break the prisoner's will first, and then they had the best chance of getting the prisoner to cooperate. There's tons of studies about it. Literally tons of very legitimate studies from all sorts of people in all countries of the world. And they understand you must break the subject's will before you get them to go along with your plan. Now, if your plan is to literally try to make a convergence of biological and digital entities in a totally new way of living with a circular economy, with totally digital currency, with universal basic income, basically an end to work, an end to jobs, an end to a purpose for your life. If that was what you were trying to bring in, you would have to break the will and the spirit of the people first, wouldn't you? So while it looks to the normal person like we just have public health officials who are incompetent and who are flopping around and don't know what they're doing, it is on purpose that they keep changing and that these things don't make sense. In fact, the less sense they actually make, the better. Because that is psychological torture. It is called the confusion technique or the Alice in Wonderland technique. And it is meant to break your will. Let me just read a little bit of the Alice in Wonderland technique for you. Here it is here, declassified by the CIA in 2014. Alice in Wonderland. The aim of the Alice in Wonderland or confusion technique is to confound the expectations and conditioned reactions of the interrogatee. He is accustomed to a world that makes some sense, at least to him, a world of continuity and logic, a predictable world. He clings to this world to reinforce his identity and powers of resistance. The confusion technique is designed not only to obliterate the familiar, but to replace it with the weird. I mean, right there. What are we living through? In this strange atmosphere, the subject finds that the pattern of speech and thought, which he has learned to consider normal, have been replaced by eerie meaninglessness. Can't you just hear the word salads in your head when Justin Trudeau or Joe Biden or Anthony Fauci or whoever gets up there in front of the microphone and they just make no sense? And since we have controlled media, generally the media questions, at least in Canada, make no sense either. And they don't follow up questions logically when they should. As the process continues, day after day, if necessary, the subject begins to try to make sense of the situation, and then the situation becomes mentally intolerable. Now, he is likely to make significant admissions or pour out his story just to stop the flow of babble which assails him. This technique may be especially effective with the orderly, obstinate type. And they want to induce regression. It says, all depend upon the interrogator's control of the environment and, as always, a proper matching of method to source. Some interrogatees can be repressed by persistent manipulation of time, by retarding and advancing clocks and serving meals at odd times. Day and night are jumbled. Interrogation sessions are similarly unpatterned, and the subject may be brought back for more questioning just a few minutes after being dismissed. Blah, blah, blah. What they're trying to say here. Now, of course, we're not being questioned. We're not being interrogated. But we are being subject to like this constant barrage of new rules. Oh, wait, we went back on this rule. Oh, we slightly modified that. We changed the date of the end. Oh, we've rolled it back. Oh, we've extended it. Oh, there's an emergency order. Oh, it's different in this jurisdiction. We have gray zones and we have green zones. And where are you today? And I mean, it's kind of the same as being interrogated because our fate hangs on their every announcement. And we are kind of being interrogated because they keep saying things or implying that if we just do certain things, then we can get out of this mess. Wear the mask, 6 feet apart, 3 feet apart, children in school, children out of school, parks open, parks closed, don't see your mother, you know, get the app, get the vaccine. If we do these dances to the nonsense, ever-changing, confusing rules, then they say we can be free. So they put the onus on us. Now look, I am not saying that every public health official and every local mayor and every premier of every province or governor of every state has been to Davos and got some memo and they're all following along and not at all. It's very likely a lot of them are totally confused, terrified, being paid off. They have compromise on them. They are just stupid. They're scared. They're greedy. Very, very obviously, that's the vast majority of them, for sure. But it is right out there, written in books, written in memos, written in policy papers and in agreements between the different countries and the World Economic and the World Health Organization. It is written down that they're going to take their orders from these people. They've agreed. And it trickles down through the system. Nobody's saying, at least I don't think, that every last hospital administrator is in on this. No. They're not. But they are all part of this plan, unbeknownst to them. And sadly, look how many of them are just going along with it. And the planners counted on that. They knew it. They knew the people would. Out of fear, greed, out of compromise, out of promises, bribes, threats, or just pure stupidity and laziness. So, my friends, hopefully now you understand if you look at COVID measures through this lens and not the pure lens of common sense, you will understand. You will be one of the initiated. And then you'll understand Manly P. Hall's quote, "When the human race learns to read the language of symbolism, a great veil will fall from the eyes of men." Manly P. Hall was very much initiated into all this stuff. Not the modern day outcomes of it, but the earlier initiation rites that led us directly to where we are today. I'm going to stop talking now. Thanks, everybody. Please don't forget to head on over to my website, amazingpolly.net. And if you'd like to support my work, you can do so online. There's a digital payment form. Or you can send me something through the mail. My P.O. box is there for you. I will return again soon with another video. And until next time, thanks for being here. Peace out.